On Sunday, January 29th, I took a vacation. I know you're not listening to this podcast because you want to hear about my vacations, but it just so happens that on January 29th, we flew out of the Newark, New Jersey airport. And within hours of our departure, protesters had assembled to denounce President Trump's immigration and travel policy changes. When you're out of the country and you're on vacation, especially in these times, you try not to pay attention to the news. And I had the luxury of a poor internet connection and not an abundance of televisions. So I was blissfully unaware over the last week of what was happening. Upon my return, I came across several articles that featured quotes from technology leaders denouncing Trump's plan and hinting at potential shortages of labor offshore if Trump continued on his plans. And I found the information very overwhelming and somewhat confusing. So I did a deep dive. I did some research to understand exactly what was happening. And that's what we're going to talk about this week. I put some of this information together in a blog post specifically to help me research this podcast. I will be as apolitical as possible in discussing this situation. This is not a political blog, but the reason why we're talking about this particular subject is to determine if there will be a legitimate impact on IT companies as a result of the Trump administration's immigration policies and executive orders. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast, episode 58. Before we get to our main story, let's discuss the acquisitions that have taken place over the last 2 weeks. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise has acquired a security startup company called Nyara. It's a startup that uses machine learning and big data analytics on enterprise packet streams and log streams to detect and protect customers from advanced cyber attacks. Salesforce acquired Sequence to build out its UX design services. This acquisition underscores Salesforce's desire to sell more services to customers that complement the software they are already buying. Before the acquisition, Sequence worked with companies like Best Buy, Peet's, Apple, and Google. And speaking of Salesforce, because you know I love rumors about Salesforce, there's discussions that Google could potentially buy Salesforce, even though Amazon has a long-term contract with them at the moment. Salesforce currently has a market cap of about $55 billion. And a research company called Arete speculates that Google would have to come to the table with about $73 billion to make this deal happen. But Google is looking to buy legitimate cloud customers, and this would certainly do that. It's totally a long shot. Going back from 2 weeks ago, Hewlett-Packard picked up another company called Cloud Cruiser. They make software that helps large companies visualize how and where their IT budget is being spent across different business units and different technology platforms. Cisco purchased a company called AppDynamics for $3.7 billion. The application helps monitor performance of applications, regardless of the platform, and to find issues before they become a major problem. IBM picked up a company called Agile3. They make security dashboards for business leaders. Agile3's founder, Raghu Varadhan, was actually with IBM as a chief architect prior to starting this company. I guess you really can go home again. That is, of course, unless you are traveling from Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, or Yemen back into the United States. I know that was in poor taste, but it is a good transition. So while I was away, I came home to news reports that people were being stopped in airports and prevented entry into the United States. Honestly, I didn't know what countries were impacted, what was happening. So when I got home, I got up early in the morning, made a cup of coffee, and started reading before the rest of my family woke up. And it seems like there is some confusion around what has occurred so far. So to recap, on January 29th, President Trump released an executive order imposing a 90-day travel ban on citizens of 7 predominantly Muslim countries. Those countries, again, are Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. The executive order also suspended the U.S. Refugee Administration Program for 120 days and indefinitely prohibits Syrian refugees from entering the United States. As of Sunday, February 5th, the Department of Justice blocked that presidential executive order. So at the moment, travel from those countries has been reestablished. President Trump's actions and some of the comments that he's made during his campaign is leading many political insiders to assume that President Trump will go after the H-1B visa program. The H-1B visa is a non-immigrant visa that allows U.S. companies to employ graduate-level workers in specific occupations that require theoretical or technical expertise in specialized fields like IT, finance, accounting, architecture, engineering, mathematics, science, medicine, you get the idea. The program allows for 65,000 people and an additional 20,000 for IT to enter the country annually. And then there are various secondary rules based on the country of origin. So this program is allowing 85,000 immigrant workers to come into the United States to fill labor shortages. During Trump's campaign, there was a controversy, I think it's fair to say it's a controversy, with Disney. Several IT workers that worked within Disney filed lawsuit against the Mouse House. The domestic workers of Disney were essentially saying that they were qualified workers, and qualified workers were being replaced by foreign workers who were much cheaper. In October of 2016, a judge ruled that Disney did not violate the H-1B laws in their layoffs. But this is something that President Trump keyed in on during his campaign. And in light of his executive order against those seven Muslim countries, many are concerned that he's going to go after the H-1B program, which would limit the availability of technical workers in Silicon Valley, and obviously in other various technical companies. While I was away, several tech CEOs have spoken out against the president and his immigration policies, and his potential future immigration policies. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella stated, "There is no place for bias or bigotry in any society, in any context. That's where we start from. It is the enlightened immigration policy of this country that made it possible for me to come here in the first place and gave me all of this opportunity." Google co-founder Sergey Brin also spoke out against the president, stating, "I think it's important not to frame this debate as being liberal versus Republican and so forth. It's a debate about fundamental values and about thoughtful policymaking and many of the other things that I think are apparently not universally adored, but I think the vast majority of our country and our legislators and so forth support." Apple CEO Tim Cook has not publicly spoken out against the president, but did write an internal memo to employees. The memo, which was shared with the press, states, "There are employees at Apple who are directly affected by yesterday's immigration order. Our HR, legal, and security teams are in contact with them, and Apple will do everything we can to support them. We're providing resources on Apple Web for anyone with questions or concerns about immigration policies, and we've reached out to the White House to explain the negative effect on our coworkers and our company." There is another large IT company that has addressed these immigration issues, but has come under criticism. IBM has also come out in support of their employees that may be impacted by these travel changes by the president. But many are criticizing IBM for the weakness of their response. A few days after the other major tech firms spoke out against the Muslim ban, IBM said that the company long believed in diversity, inclusion, and tolerance, and that the path for prosperity, innovation, and civil society is the path of engagement and openness to the world. IBM's statement over the Muslim ban didn't make any direct mention of the issue or President Trump. An iTechPost.com article makes the case that IBM's weak stance on the Trump Muslim ban might be because Chief Executive Ginni Rometty is currently one of a dozen high-profile figures advising the president on a strategic and policy forum. Another member of that forum was Uber boss Travis Kalanick, and he has resigned from that post. It's clear that technology companies are concerned that their foreign employees may be impacted by Trump's executive orders and future immigration changes. There also seems to be a concern about access to mathematic and scientifically trained resources in foreign countries. And there are two sides to this issue. In doing research for this podcast and for the post that I made a few days ago, I just wanted to get a general idea of how many people are currently in the United States working under this program. Not how many people are allowed in total, but how many people are already here. And there's not an exact number. It's estimated that there's between 650,000 and 850,000 people currently working here under the H-1B program. But that's a variance of 200,000 people. Taking any political view out of this, we should have much better records on who's working here under that program. That's a fallacy of the program that makes it look weak. That has to be remediated. That weakness obviously creates the ability to criticize the program. And I'm sure that criticism will lead to reform. On the other side of this conversation, allowing foreign workers into the country, there's a conversation to be had that by allowing people to come into the country to work, you're actually keeping jobs physically in the country. And by making it harder to bring those resources in when they're needed, it will force companies to send more work outside of the United States because it will be easier and less problematic than bringing people in. This is a complex geopolitical, financial situation that needs to be viewed with nuance and foresight. As a person who comes from a family of immigrants, I have a lot of personal feelings about being allowed to come into this country and make a life for yourself. My family fled Italy after World War II to find jobs and to make a better life for ourselves. And they did that successfully. And I would not have the life that I have today if it weren't for their ability to come here. But as a person who's worked in IT, I've also seen functions and departments get replaced and moved offshore. I've seen friends lose their jobs. And it's not as simple as there's cheaper resources offshore. But I can see how easy it is to want to jump at that and condense it into that most simple of outcomes. Over the last few weeks, I've talked about Tom Friedman's book called Thank You for Being Late. And it sort of ties into this, because as a domestic employee, I know that I'm going to be on the hook for constantly re-educating myself for the next 25 years. And there are times when I'm getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to research this podcast that it's exhausting. I'm tired. And I can see how that can be overwhelming for people who maybe didn't think that they signed up for something like this, who signed up for an office job just to go in and work their 9 to 5. And the constant threat of maybe your job's going to get outsourced, you have to be more productive, and you constantly have to re-educate yourself. I can see how someone wants to look for an easy answer. But I don't think that there is an easy solution. And I don't think I can wrap up this podcast in a simple bow. We really need to step back and wait and see how these policy changes truly impact businesses, tech companies, and the people that are traveling and immigrating to the United States. While it's easy to assume the worst in these scenarios, let's try to be hopeful and assume that the people who are making these policy changes know what they're doing. And that's all we have for this week. As a reminder, you can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mantua, New Jersey, and is produced and recorded by me. Music is provided by Google. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.